Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach-churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
Kind of waffle in league, you know what I mean? Yeah. More come with the up now, going for a streak. Got a 420 game to play, double deadlies hit the screen. It's the tennis, getting rich is the dream. D2P down with the no tickets, the game. Best believe Larry Fourport never tame. Twitter fighting over turtle soup and fair value gaps. You ran the stats, the cap.
Oh, look, cause the reversal of the Denny D had a been a smash. Getting paper, living large, making cash. Dreams in sight, about to reach, about to grab. Hustle hard, never stop, say it fast.
How's that, dude, for a hype song to get us going?
AI is just on one, man. Holy cow. Shout out to CP on that. He sent me that. I was like, dude, what in the
fuck? How do you get it to make the little reversal blip in when it said reversal?
I was like, dude.
Out of control. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders. I'm Kyle. Be hosting today along with Baba Yaga over there. Flary, our CEO, self-appointed.
AI appointed.
AI appointed. I did not appoint myself.
There's another. We're sending out a whole bunch of emails to people for this Boston blockchain thing, trying to get them, you know, scheduled and everything. And ChatGPT is signing every email flurry. I told Laura to just tell ChatGPT he's been fired already, please. Let's see what we got going on tonight. Got a couple topics sent into us. One of them coming from Dominic from this morning session, and then Eraser for Paper sent us in another one. So I think we're going to spend our time covering those today, unless you guys have any objections.
No, I saw those too, and they're definitely conversation starters.
Yeah.
To say the least.
What was the one? Playing with house money, or how to manage profitable accounts. And then I think the other one was, getting in, having the right idea, but being too early. And that's, I know, something I deal with a lot. Baba, see you raising your hand there. All right. You guys have any news or updates or shout outs you want to throw out there before we kick things off here?
Baba, never. I got one this week, actually. Let's go with, I want to do a shout out to FTT. Fast Track Trading. Yeah. I put a comment on Twitter, I had a pretty good experience with them in a pretty shitty situation from a customer service perspective. And I just think, you know, you guys know I've been exploring them. Like, I think I was member like 100 in their Discord, and they're at like 10,000 now. Because here's the thing. Somebody, you know, the reply guys are out there, you know, blah, 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 prop firm space, you know, whatever. And I get it, dude. The space is fucking toxic as fuck. But here's the thing. If you follow my Twitter feed, if you follow anything that I've done in this space publicly, where I share information over the last, like, however many years I've been forward facing, let's just say 3+ years, all I try to do is share edge and alpha. I don't sugarcoat it. I don't put bullshit out there. I literally give you my stats, my setups. I break them down, what I do. And this is no different than that. I'm not recommending anything to anyone. Do your own research. Go see if they're a fit for you. All of that good stuff, right? Like, but if I'm saying anything about it, there's that alpha there. So figure that out however you figure that out. But, you know, I'm not going to mention it. I'm not going to mention their customer service, and I'm not going to mention their offering if both of them don't have some version of edge, or if I haven't had a positive experience with it. So, you know, take that for what it is. But, yeah, I mean, again, the reply guys and this stuff. And, dude, it's like crazy week. Apex is fucking making people take videos and all this stuff.
Yeah, what the hell is going on with that?
Dude, it's just – it's buck wild. So, you know what? It just seemed like – obviously, they've done some right by me. I've taken some good payouts from these guys. Like, I only put it out there because, like, everything that I do, I feel like it's an opportunity to share a way for other people to make some money. Right. That's literally all I try to do is share some version of edge. And I believe that if you have the right attitude towards approach to their version of the game, that there's some edge to be made. And I also mentioned, like, I've seen a lot of people who have struggled to ever get a payout, you know, find success in their sort of like model. And, you know, don't get me wrong. They are I would call them high stakes. It's literally like the high stakes version. So be careful. And understand their game, like anything. Like, this is a zero-sum game. Understand what they're trying to do is they're charging a lot for a fair amount of capital with no evaluation. And if you don't screw it up, you go right to a payout. But it's high stakes, right? Like, you spend a lot to get a lot, and it's very easy, you know, like anything. In poker, you sit down at the big game. It's very easy to run up a big old stack. It's also easy to lose half your roll. Really quickly. So like anything, it's a leveraged product, blah, 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 all that good shit. But like, dude, the whole point is I'm sharing something I think that has edge. So shout out to them for having an opportunity to make some money if you haven't looked at it yet, and for, you know, doing right.
I've not heard anything bad about FTT. And my only experience with them is that I don't like the way they make you pay for their products, having to do like crypto transfer. And everything. Just take a fucking credit card, please. But
yeah, dude, don't get me wrong. I mean, that seems a little, you know, like, oh, throw up the red flag. But I mean, dude, look at the chargeback game that's running with Apex and all this stuff. I'm sure as a startup, they couldn't afford to have, you know, some percent of their people, you know, do chargebacks and all that stuff.
But I think they actually did. They did accept credit cards at one point earlier.
For a little bit, I think. Yeah. And then they went back.
And then.
Yeah.
So, dude, again, do your own research. Figure it out. I shared it because there's some fucking edge there.
Just do your research.
Read between the lines.
Just do your research.
Read between the lines. But on a side note, I do support Knob Creek, specifically the 9-year. Go to your local retailer. Check them out. That's Knob Creek. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, what number is that? Knob Creek number 9?
That is number 9.
So we got to stop at 9, okay?
You don't go past 9.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
that's what the number 13. On the bottle means.
Oh, stop at 9?
Yeah.
Or get a bigger glass.
Shit. All right.
We're going opposite directions tonight. I'm hydrating. Ooh. So
must be coming off.
I've got some unsweetened tea over here too, which I know is like blasphemy in the South. You don't have unsweetened tea, but
what are you? What, did you run out of sugar at
home? I knew that was coming from the fucking Southern guy.
All right, quick show news update. We do have some guest episodes scheduled, but I don't know if any are going to coming out until after we get done with Boston Blockchain. That goes for this weekend too. I'm not sure if there's going to be anything coming out next week. See if we can throw something together for that. Also, quick shout out to Honduras again. Still got us up there pretty high in the charts. We peaked at number 2, getting us close. You think we need one more fan over there, we'd probably do it. That's all I got over here. So,
hey, I got a shout out.
Do it.
Probably not due to me constantly saying this, but we had a crew in on voice today.
Yeah.
And last Friday. So I've enjoyed everybody jumping on to hang out for free Fridays or whatever the freak we're calling it. But it was a good time. And also some of the content for tonight's show came from folks who are relatively new to at least the Vanta side of the Discord server. I don't know how long they've been lurking on the shop side, but I know they're in trial right now, which is awesome.
Yeah, but
they reached out with some questions and thoughts, and so just kind of a shout out to everybody that hopped in today. I mean, I looked over at like 9:18, and it was like the consistent little batch of folks, and then I looked back like 15 minutes later, and I was like, "Holy, look at all these people hanging out! It's pretty slick."
Start worrying about the number of people we can have in there. Might have to start setting up a stage channel soon.
I almost, and then I was, I had something kind of sort of like not last minute come up, but like sort of came up that like pushed me to need to leave a little earlier than normal. But we were darn close to just doing like a back testing session when the market was just kind of in like a 80 point range.
No, when you thought it was just going to be balanced all day and then they broke.
Exactly. Yeah, well, yeah. I was actually,
walk at it.
Actually, I was short for that move, actually, and my exit was below the current RTH low, which we came like one tick from while I was making a pot of coffee. I told you this earlier. Kyle was there for it. I came back with a fresh cup of great coffee that cost me probably like, I don't know, what was it up? Probably like $1,000 that trade was up at that point. And you know, I was like, well, we're here now, boys. Let's just watch it come all the way back.
I had some work stuff cost me on that runner that I was holding. That was 3 points.
Kyle.
3 points.
Kyle had an exit, 3 points. He had said 67 or was it 67?
67 or bust.
Or bust. Bust. He'd said that like, he said it like 5 times today. Brutal. I looked back in chat late in the day. I mean, I was like, market was closed. And I just said, please God, tell me that you closed this. Cause we went to 70 and apparently I just find out. He said, we'll talk about it later. So I knew.
No, I didn't. You know, that came back.
But that was runners, right?
That was a runner. I scaled everything else out. Yeah.
We have to believe that had you been there, you would have not been a douche for
that. No. Points. I totally would have. Totally would have. I was.
Oh, it's funny. We all had something like that too, because I went to go give my daughter the morning hug or whatever. She was screaming, and I went up there, and I remote in, and I'm just watching the Dom or whatever. I literally set my phone down, and I had some TPs that I put in if I was going to leave the desk just in case it broke to the downside, because I was short too. And I went up there, you know, she was screaming, gave her a hug, set my phone down because I was watching it in case it went the other way. Set my phone down. I go give her the hug, pick my phone back up, you know, give her the I love you. And I look and I'm like, God, they went down. They took all of that out. And now they're 100 points lower. I'm like, you know, whatever. A very valuable hug.
Yeah.
That was an expensive cup of coffee.
Yeah,
an expensive cup of coffee. The thing is. And I know we're getting a little off topic, but I'm feeling great, you know? So it's just going to be like that. My wife has been, not complaining, but when I make just the like our coffee pot has like all the different varying sizes.
The sizes, of yeah, it's like a ninja.
And so for a while, yes, it is. And for a while, we've been doing the extra large travel mug for both of us to have one cup each. But like earlier this week, she was like, "I just don't think that's enough because you drink two cups, and then there's not enough for me, and your coffee mug's so big." So today I took the time to do half a pot, which half pot cost me. So if my wife, if you listen to this, it's your fault.
I do not endorse that at all.
I'm just kidding, dude. She's great. I would lose that money for her again.
All right. Should we try to answer one of these then?
I guess.
Let's kick off with the eraser for papers here then. So he says,
what a good name. I know. I saw that in chat and I was like, this guy.
I didn't even catch that when I was reading it. That's good.
He's either going to be awesome or terrible.
He's a good dude. He's been around for a while. Let's see. He said when he goes on winning streaks, he sometimes lets it get into his head and starts playing with house money. This overconfidence can lead to always searching for the next trade, even if it's a C or D setup or worse. I heard someone mention a strategy for dealing with this. If you're profitable, take half the profits out every 2 weeks. Whether you're up 250 or 2,500, you take out half. Slows the account growth, with the idea being that too rapid account growth can mess with your mindset too. Taking out half the profits every 2 weeks or month or whatever, it might be easier to handle the psychological impact of winning streaks and be consistently profitable. What do you guys think?
It's a big question.
Well, it's a big question too. I think that came on the heels of a discussion in the room. Like 2 days this week, we talked about that.
Yeah.
The idea came up, and so this is a little backdrop for the question of there's been some stretches where Globex trading, like this week, has been one way, or at least last couple nights, you know, pretty unidirectional, very little pullbacks. And in the past stretch of weeks, there have also just been really clean opportunities in Globex to come into RTH with realized P&L. And so another guy in the room, Ron, which I think he's fine if I say his name. If not, we can edit this out. But yeah, I don't think he cares. So he had said that sometimes that's like worse for him than if he comes in with no P&L, because he feels almost emboldened to just kind of, you know, attack the first thing he sees. I'm the opposite.
Because I'm the opposite. If I have a little bit of profit,
I don't want to go protect it route. Yeah. But I am freed up to trade, but I don't feel like I do anything stupid. Like I'm aware that that's a possibility. Oh, let me over leverage this first trade because I'm sitting on half the day's realized P&L. Where I get in trouble is if I've realized what my target of a given day would be. And so theoretically, I don't even need to be sitting at the desk, but I mean, all you guys are there. And if I come in like that, that's the only P&L status that really freaks with my mind, is if I'm done already. Right. That's where I have to be careful, just because, I don't know why, it just is the case. So that's kind of how we got there. I think the awareness piece is a big deal. And that's more what we were talking about. But for this question, I think it sounds more like if I go 2 or 3 weeks like ripping and haven't pulled anything out and I'm sitting on this increased balance, he gets a little bit wild. Is that?
That's kind of, yeah, maybe it sounds like you're like trying to take a shot, like Matt Damon when he builds up his three stacks and decides he's going to go take a run, right?
Yeah. So a couple of years ago, I had one of my better months. I think I've told this story in here before, but I withdrew less than 20%. It was my biggest month to date, and I withdrew. I mean, I don't want to talk specific numbers.
You don't have to talk numbers.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's just awkward. But yeah. I withdrew less than 20% at the end of that month, which was actually just like would have been a standard to slightly above average monthly withdrawal, and then proceeded in 3 days, the first week of the next month, to give the entire remaining what I had earned the prior 20 trading days. I lost it in 2 days and was back to like where I was. And so my thinking on it at that time was exactly like the Matt Damon thing. Here I am. Here we are. Now we've got, you know, we've got double what we normally would have. Mm-hmm. We're going to lay it in thick. And it's shocking how quickly that increased amount of size can take a pretty quick toll. And then it really makes it difficult. So my two cents on the idea is it is incredibly important to realize the dollars to your bank account. Yeah. And in some way slightly make a celebration, not like a big to-do, but do something for yourself or someone you care about with some amount of that regularly. So if yes. you,
I'm a huge advocate for that. Like,
so, yeah. So if it's every
realize the money, like realize the experience in some way. Like yeah. I always like short of what you do with the money, like, or how much you pull out, whatever your system is, do some, like I always try to like, okay, if I'm doing this, if I'm in this space, like whatever, like if I have money that's coming in from that, I always try to do something extra, buy something for the kids, whatever. Like it's such a good way to like, TD Jakes always calls it like celebrate the victories. Like don't forget to like have the birthday cake, to eat the cake,
fist bump.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you got to do something with it too. So I love that idea of like, realize it in a way that like, I did this work and now look, here's a, you know, whatever, bouquet of roses for my wife on the kitchen table.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be huge.
I don't care what it is, but like do something with it that's like something that you wouldn't have normally done too.
Maybe your first payout is like dinner date money. Or, you know,
you know, my first, one of my first payouts from a prop firm was just that, like dinner date money. Mm-hmm. That month that I just referenced, I bought myself an overpriced custom made hand stitched wallet. So I spec'd it out to a leather, whatever you would call a leather person. I don't know. A leather worker,
a leather,
leathersmith. And then, like custom, like the stitching colors, the whole deal. And it was just, I mean, it wasn't that expensive, but I would have never bought it otherwise. But it was just a way to kind of commemorate, like now that experience is seared in my mind, both from the bad that happened the week following, but also the fact that every time I pull my wallet out, it's a reminder, you know, of where that came from and how I got that. And it was really meaningful at the time.
Okay. So Laura's really good at names and like words. So mm-hmm. which of these do you think is going to be the one she's shouting out as she's editing this, trying to tell us what an old word for a leather worker is? It's either be Barker, Burker, Courier, Tanner, Tower, Whittier, or Whittier.
A Tanner.
I'm guessing Tanner.
Yep. Yeah.
That's like, if it's not, that's what it should be called.
Period. That's right.
All right. Yeah. Leave an applause in there, Laura, when we say the one that you said.
Hooray. Hey. You said something, Flary, that I think you should talk more about along the lines of this question. You said whatever your system is for doing that. So implicit in that statement is
there should be a system
for some regularity in how you go about retrieving your money from this whole game. So what would you talk about that a little bit?
So like a minimum account balance that you just try to maintain, or?
Yeah. And I think that's why it's such a broad question, because I think the way he framed it is like, whether you're up 250 or 2,500, you know, like what do you do when you're up? So I think first part one, you should have a relatively systematic way that you pay yourself, which I'm a huge proponent for. So every Friday I have a system for analyzing the week, and removing X percent of profits, and from that X percent of profits from the week, some percent of that. So let's just say, you know, whatever, it's a $10,000 week. I would say, okay, of that $10,000, $8,000 comes out and goes into a bank account. $2,000 gets compounded into my trading account. And now we go revisit the $8,000. Of the $8,000, say maybe 75% of it or something goes into wherever my wife puts it, right? Mm-hmm. And $2,000 of it goes into savings, or maybe $1,500 goes into savings and $500 goes into a, let's do something nice that we, you know, whatever. Let's whatever, do something or put it into a vacation fund or Christmas fund or whatever it is. So, you know, using 10,000 because it's a round number and it's easy to deal with. But the idea is that there's some version of how am I going to pay myself with my profits? And it doesn't matter what they are, to Eraser for Paper's point, whether it's 250 or 2,500 or whatever, have a system for saying, okay, here's my profits for the week above my starting balance. Of those profits, here's what I'm going to do with them. So then it's not a decision of whether, what am I going to do if I'm on a streak or whatever. It's here's how I handle that. Now, first world problem is you have so much money that it doesn't matter whether or not you're pulling that out. And then it becomes a different problem of now I'm up a bunch and I have more in my account than I'm acclimated to. And what do I do with that? Do I change my bet sizing? Do I bet bigger on some of these trades? Do I you know, increase size this week, and how do I approach that? Which I think is like really the leader into the second part of this is you should also have a system for how much you're going to bet on a given setup, whether it's based on sharp, whether it's based on, you know, your win rate of it, or however you're doing that, quality of setup A through C or however you're doing it. But I always view this in a poker mindset. For any game that I want to play, let's say it's a cash game and it's a $200 buy-in. If I want to play that game consistently, profitably, as like sort of like a hustle that I would do, I would want to have somewhere between 50 and 100 buy-ins for that game. I think trading is the same. If you're going to take a trade and it has $200 risk, you should have probably 50 to 100 of those trades in your bankroll in order to be able to take that trade. So let's say you have a great week and all of a sudden your bankroll is up. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to step up in game, right? So if you're playing the $200 buy-in game or the $200 risk trade, you don't necessarily have to then wake up the next morning and say, oh, it's time to step up in stakes. Like I'm going to play, you know, the $500 buy-in game and I'm going to take $500 of the risk. But to some point, I do think that when you're on a good winning streak, because that's what he mentioned is a winning streak specifically, I do think you should also have a systematic approach to when you should shot take. Mm-hmm. And I typically won't step up in size or won't step up in poker game unless I have somewhere between 50 and 100 buy-ins at the next level, right? So let's say with that $20,000 bankroll we needed to play the, you know, 3-6 game for life was $20,000. And all of a sudden I'm up 10 grand playing 3-6. That doesn't mean I just jump into playing, you know, 6-12 right away, or the 4-8 game or whatever, but or that I have to wait all the way until I'm up 10 grand. Let's say you have a great week. You can sit down and spend one buy-in sitting at the big table, but spend one buy-in. Don't spend a week at the bigger game getting your lunch fucking money taken. Because you have to learn all the things that are going on that bigger game. And trading is the same way, right? So if you're a two-lot trader and you have a great week being a two-lot trader and you come back and you're going to say, next week I'm going to be a four-lot trader. Well, you don't know specifically all the things that you're going to run into being a four-lot trader, the emotions, the all of the stuff that comes along with that. But that doesn't mean that you can't come back and see an A-plus setup and say, okay, the next A plus setup I see, I'm going to size this on a four lot and I'm going to see how I react to this. And if you do well, then you stay playing that game. And again, I'm not here to say what I think that should look like, but I am saying that I think you should have a systematic approach to that, that not only you pay yourself some version of your account each week until you're set to the point where like it becomes an arbitrary question, or you don't need to withdraw and you can just compound. And two, when you're at the level you're at and you're on a good streak at that level, having a systematic approach to how you're going to shot take. And that's what I would call that, is shot taking. And it's called a shot take because you take a shot at a higher level. It's not called a, I'm playing this other level forever now, because that comes when you have the bankroll for the next level and the skill set. And you only know that from taking shots. And when you shot take and you get your lunch money taken, you could just go back to where you were making your lunch money before.
Yeah.
And the poker environment is very much that same thing, right? Like you win a lot at $200 tournaments, $200 buy-in tournaments, $200 buy-in tournaments. You shot take a $1,000 main event buy-in And you know what? Maybe you lose. Okay, you just go back to the $200 tournaments that gave you the opportunity to shot take. You shot take again. Boom, now I got a cash. Okay, I cashed for 10 grand in this 1K payout. Well, now I have a couple more opportunities to, one, have longevity in my $200 buying tournaments, and two, take a few more shots at that. And eventually a shot take comes into, all right, I'm going to settle in and I'm going to try to now comfortably trade or comfortably play at this level poker or this level tournament. So again, at the end of the day, I think it's all about having a systematic approach, or at least like a plan, right? Like, yes, lay it out and say, here's how I'm going to do it. Because as soon as you start to step into a higher stakes environment without a plan and you get punched in the face, you know, in whatever the old Mike Tyson, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. You know, have a plan, because the likely outcome is you take a shot and they call it a shot take for a reason and you get punched in the face and you go back down. But you have to have the idea that you're taking a shot so that you can have the humility to step back down to where you were comfortably making money.
But there was one other key thing that you said in that, in the shot take, and that was like, what thing are you going to focus on as part of that shot that you're taking? And the example you gave is, I'm going to look and see how I manage the emotions of, you know, the increased P&L. Like, there's got to be something too that you're looking to gain from it. That makes it a much more effective tool, because now you're, whether you hit your shot or not, you're taking something away from it, something valuable that's going to help you the next time.
Yeah, can I survive in this environment moving forward? Because it's an information gathering experience. If you just think you have the skill set and you're too scared to take the shot, you just build up a bunch of money at the level that you're at, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, like in the Rounders, you know, that's Knish, right? He's a leather assing, you know, you can just go beat up the 6-12 game at the Chesterfield. Well, yeah, okay. But I also can't get to Vegas if I don't go play KGB. And you know, trading is very much that way, but you don't know what you don't know until you go take that shot. So you should be, from a introspective like point of view, like learning something as you go, like, am I capable? And being honest, like, I think we've talked about this, especially for me, like I tried to, step up my size for the better part of like 6 months, probably too aggressively and did okay. But like, for the most part, like had to say, I don't think I'm ready. Mm-hmm. And got pretty beat up, you know, trying to stay at a level where I had shot taken several times. And, when I said, okay, I think I'm ready to be there, I wasn't. And I had to say, okay, like, humility, go here. Right. And, mm-hmm. and build back up so that I can take what I learned, to your point, and on my next attempt, maybe stay longer on that rung. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're on this rung. And then that rung comes back down to here and you're shot taking the next rung. And the whole point is that there needs to be some version of a systematic approach to, when are you going to do that? How much are you going to do that? So that when you do step into the arena of a higher stakes or a larger account or whatever it is, that you know, and have the humility to say, okay, you know, not this time, I'm not ready, yeah. and step back down to where you are ready. And all of this is based upon the fact that you're already at a level that you're ready. Like, you should be executing at a place where you're comfortable already, because the whole point is that you're stepping out of your comfort zone to some extent, and you're seeing how am I going to act and react in this place of unfamiliarity. And what information was I able to gather from that? So I think that's the biggest piece, is like, have it be a learning. Don't just go, you know, you don't just go sit down with more money to see, you know, because, right? And yeah, that's fun. Don't get me wrong. Like, go punt, you know, at the 5100 game and see what happens, because it's fun to sit down and play high stakes. Don't get me wrong. As like a professional gambler, to some extent, like, it's fun, but it's also not conducive to like longevity,
right?
Unless you go on a run. Now, that being said, you also should have a system for like, when you step up and you shot take, what if it works, right? So right. How long do you shot take? Do you stay there until whatever? And I think that gets into like a little bit of like equity curve type trading. You know, maybe you shot take and you kind of keep a moving average of like what your average P&L is, you know, and when you dip below that, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you step back down, kind of thing. Or is it like, you know, two red days in a row, and then you step back down to the other level or whatever that is, because you shot take, and let's just say you're making $500 a day trade. you shot take, and all of a sudden now you make $1,000 a day. And the shot take goes well, and you stay at that level. And for another week, you have a great week, and you just had a $5,000 week. And before, your week was $2,500. Well, what do you do now, right? Mm-hmm. Do you stay at that $1,000 a day sort of like profit target? In my opinion, sure. Like, okay, like stay there until, you know, somebody takes your lunch money and you go, okay, that was one bad day. And maybe it's 2 days. I don't know, whatever it is. But the point is, have a system, lay it out, have a plan, and follow that plan. Because when you're in an unfamiliar environment, risking more money than you typically have risked before, that is a recipe for disaster. So just be prepared to know that, like, it's uncharted territory, and the risk is significantly higher here, and the player field is significantly better, yeah. Right? Like, that's like a huge piece. And yeah, trading is interesting in the fact that, like, you're like always competing against the sharks, even when you're betting small and betting big. And that's probably the biggest variable difference between poker and trading, is that in poker, you can game select.
Yeah.
In trading, you cannot game select. You can set up select, but you cannot game select. You are always competing against the best in the world every time you click the button. In poker, you can go, that table is full of absolute fish, I'm going to go over there and destroy them. And you can stay in that game forever. You don't have to choose to sit on high stakes poker and play Phil Ivey for $1 million pot. You don't have to. But in trading, you do, right? Like, you have to go trade the algo. So again, I think it's even more important to say, okay, when I step up out of my comfort zone and I'm playing the same game that all these guys who are already on that level, right, are playing, what am I going to do when I give some back? And, you know, again, like finding that sort of pattern. But I think a process of paying yourself each week, especially if you're at that stage, is huge. Like, I saw really, really big growth when I viewed my trading capital as a job and started paying myself from that trading capital and stopped thinking about compounding it. And what if I would have just kept that 10K in here this week? And this next week I was trading, you know, X number of lots more. And then that week would have been 15, you know, stop thinking like that and start thinking about, like, how can I supplement whatever I'm doing or pay for my bills at this level? And then find a way to build your account till when you take that money out, there's some left over to compound. And then what are you going to do with the compounding? Do you let it compound until you're comfortable taking a shot or stepping to the next level?
I think that's about as comprehensive as it gets.
Ask me how I know.
Right. All right, Eraser. I think you got your answer there. Make a plan and stick to it. I think that's basically what that boils down to, right?
Yeah. And ping me if you want to with some, the more detailed like breakdown of how I viewed that. Whatever. Don't everybody ping me, but Eraser.
Yeah. And don't forget what you did to get you to where you had the opportunity to take a shot.
Yeah, there's one thing that was in there that I kind of wanted to zero in on just real quick, but it said the statement there, overconfidence lead to always searching for the next trade. That statement right there, searching for that. Were you searching for trades when you had that run, or are you searching for trades? No, not you. The hypothetical person in this question. Yeah, I'm guessing you weren't staring at the charts trying to find where the next trade was when you made that run up.
Probably not. They probably weren't. I mean, it's like a repeat, 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 repeat.
Yeah.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com, and that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age.
And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Well, and he's talking about being upstuck too, right?
Yeah.
That's a big thing. You're on a big runner. The glass slipper, dude. I'm a big glass slipper guy. I mean, just the other day, I was texting people like, "Yo, watch out for me. It's coming. I'm telling you, it's coming." And dude, the first of the month, it's an absolute curse for me. Absolute curse.
And honestly, dude, this is
going to be one of those months. August will be a record month, and historically, Monday, which thank God is a holiday, Monday I will punt back a ton. And that all goes back to this concept of like whatever. And, you know, sometimes it's punt back everything, right? And without a plan, it's, you know, okay, now I know, you know, what being upstuck feels like. And you can't chase that stuff too. That's the thing, is like, if you're searching for trades or you're outside your system, like you were saying, Baba, like you're already lost.
Yeah.
Go back to what worked. Just go back to what worked. And the something started the streak, and that was a comfortable approach at the level that you were betting. And until you go back to that, you're always going to be in uncharted territory. And until you feel comfortable in the uncharted territory, you should be shot taking there, not living there. And you should always have some spot that you can go back to, that good old trusty, that comfortable zone, those setups that just work when you're struggling, and all of that good stuff. And I think that's, you know, big key. But I am a big proponent for pushing. Bet more. Bet more when winning more.
Well, let's talk about Dominic's question then here, because I think this is another really good one. This happens to me a lot. It talks about being on the right side of the trade, but putting your size on too early. Happened to him a few times this week where he was forced out for a loss, then got in with a much smaller size on the right side of the V, caught a killer trade just to end back at break even.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've seen that happen how many times? Yeah. And that's a real thing.
That just comes to being afraid of missing the move. Like, you want to just get in immediately, and then you're just afraid that it's going to leave without you. And
well, that's like today. I mean, yeah, today I had the plan to be shorting in that
60s area.
560s. Yeah. After 10:30 a.m., I think it was after 10:30. I wanted to be short from around the 60s or 70s. And is that not when I took that trade? Or maybe I took that trade before 10:30.
No, it was after 10:30. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like 10:15 or so. I took that trade. Okay. It went all the way down to 5:20 or something. And my exit was below RTH lows. Then it went to 602. Then we broke down with like a two leg move down. And I think like I had a setup entry, blah, blah, blah. It was great. If I was here, I would have taken some of that off or taken that off. But I think you hit the nail on the head, Kyle, it's the idea that I feel like I grapple with sometimes is I have a good idea of where I think we're going to go or where this story is getting told to. Like I feel very comfortable with how this is progressing that we are going to trade lower. You know, again, the whole how do you filter strength in the market? How do you make a statement like the Bulls are really lackluster, which we talked about that this morning. They're just like, what are we doing here, guys? Like, if we're going, it's time to go. Like, where right. where we are here. So I think that the challenging part is just because you have a good idea based on your work of where we're going to end up, it is still possible that the setup you're looking for to be able to hit your wagon does not appear.
Yeah.
And so I think having a thought process or a contingency plan or an allowance for, I could be very right in the move that develops over the next hour to hour and a half. And I also have to be very okay with, if I don't get an opportunity for entry, am I going to be okay with just not participating? Or when I see this starting to develop and I don't have anything in my toolbox, quote unquote, that gives me the chance to be short or be long, is that a play? Is that where, I mean, that's where most people start to innovate. They're like, well, I'm just going to sell it here.
But sometimes I think it helps just to like talk to yourself about it.
Yeah.
Like, I had an experience Thursday with that, like exactly what you're talking about, where like the trade was setting up. The setup said to put the limit order here and wait for a fill. And the instinct was market. I don't want to wait for the fill. It's going to go without me, blah, 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 blah. But I had to have that little conversation with myself that said, hey, we're doing it the way this setup says to do it. We're going to put our limits there because we said we're not going to act on FOMO today. And if the trade doesn't get us, then we're just going to have to accept that. And like, we'll look for another one. It's okay.
Yeah. And you can, and I think there's, I think it's hard for me to do this, but finding like today, I found a lot I found a lot of annoyance with how the day develops.
Yeah.
And I actually said like, I mean, after that bounce up and like, I was slightly green on the day, but I was just like, I don't feel like dealing with this anymore. Like it's just it was annoying me, but looking back later and mm-hmm. being like, you know, we did have that cornered and that yeah. feels good. And mm-hmm. so, celebrating, even if you don't get to hit your wagon to it, that like your work is pointing you in the right direction and you're looking in the right, like for the right ideas to play out. There's something very confirming about that. I would say, I don't want to sound like a do whatever you want. It's pandemonium, but you could have, you could give yourself a certain number, a certain dollar amount of risk every day or every week or a certain number of contracts where when you see the beginnings of what you anticipate to unfold to happen, you could just have a contingency plan that says, man, even if they don't give me that perfect retrace to this line, I'm just going to put on 3 micros or 1 micro or whatever your size allows for. And I'm going to give it twice the stop because this is a fuzzy entry. So it'll be the same R that I'm risking as if it were a regular position, but I'm just going to allow for more movement against me because I'm just jumping in here on the bigger idea that I think based on my work, we're going to trade all the way down through this low that we've put in and lower. I could have done that today. I did the opposite. I put on like a full position and then I was just like, they're going to pay me on this and I'm going to be done by 11 o'clock. That was my idea. So
the other thing that you could do too, which is something that I think you suggested in the past, Baba, is to just look at them after the fact and then mm-hmm. figure out where and the
develop
entry
a setup,
is.
Develop yeah. a setup off of that. If that happens, you know, it's easy when it happens and you're just like, oh man, I mean, I've been there, dude. Like today was perfect example. On the flip side, it's also okay to go, man, that happens like twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way I like to enter doesn't present itself. And then we get these real outsized moves. What is true in the moments preceding that, that I could exploit? Where's a little bit of edge in there somewhere that I could get, that I could create another setup that's in accordance with, you know, my risk parameters and blah, blah, blah. And that's where a lot of my work, honestly, a lot of it comes from how could I have taken advantage of that? Where is the market tipping its hand a little bit that I can dig in? I mean, there's some work like I'm wanting to do currently, because there's a couple of things that I'm like, this is really close and I can't quite figure out how to squeeze the rest of the lemon juice out of it. And there's something I'm missing something, and I've got to do a little bit of testing, but there's like a setup that's lurking under the surface that I feel it. Like, I know it's there. I just got to dig it out. And so that could be, like you said, it could be motivation to go, let's look back at the day and see what could we mine out. And if it's an apparition, if it happens once a week, it's probably not worth it. But if you notice it enough that it's annoying you, then there's probably some work to do. And that's always fun. Get in that lab, boy.
Flair, you got any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to break down Dominic's comment. And this is no offense to Dominic, who I don't know. But the first part that really jumps out to me is that he said, being right on a trade idea, but putting on size too early. Mm-hmm. It's not a thing. You can't be right and early. So let's just say size too early for him. We'll just use round numbers. He put on a 10 lot and he was too early, but he's right on the trade. Like, that doesn't make sense. So then when he was on the right side of the trade now, which he called a V, and I'm now on the right side of the V, he's only taking the trade on a 5 lot. The comment has, in my opinion, skewed logic. One, if you felt like you were on the right side of the trade when you entered on the larger size, there was no reason to puke it if you were on the right side of the trade. You just didn't give the trade enough room if you felt it was right. So if it was right,
could be a sizing, yeah, right, could be a, yeah, sizing slash risk issue,
which is the next, right, piece. So either A, the size you put on when you were on the right, like the trade was right, you just had so much size that you couldn't manage the setup until it went to where you wanted to go. So yeah, the idea was right, but the comfort level of the trade was wrong. So you get into, you know, pyramiding into the trade, blah, blah, blah. You start with a 3 lot, or, you know, let's say typically you want to start with like larger size and go down. So like you start with a 5 lot and then you take some heat, right? The V forms, it goes back past your entry. It starts to break down. You add a 3, then you add a 2, and now you're in a 10 lot. Okay. You know, now you're on the right side of the trade. You were able to sit through the move in a 5 lot, but you couldn't sit through it in a 10 lot. So in my opinion, if he felt like he was on the right side of the trade, but then got puked out, the issue is either in the sizing or, you know, where the stop was, and maybe, well, it's both.
But I remember one thing we've talked about before on here, and that's like where the retrace points can be like real fuzzy sometimes. Like you might have like 3 or 4 swing highs that look like targets, and you know that one of them they're going to stop at, but you don't know which one until you see them tip their hand. And so maybe there's some of that too. Like you're trying to anticipate it, but we don't know necessarily when it's going to happen. It's going to happen, but you need to wait for something to confirm that it's happening.
Yeah. And I'm a big, as far as like the scaling in, scaling out thing, which is to each their own. It's very difficult to tell somebody one way about it because the market, yeah, is always different, but I'm a big sort of like feeler position size to see if it's working. And that could be quick. Like it could be like, I put one on and then I right away put another one on. And then I'll take that one off and I'll sit in the feeler. And when it rolls, that's when you should be putting it on. But you know, to his point, if you want to be all in, all out, right? Mm-hmm. Which it sounds like he was doing here. You need to be able to calculate. If you thought you were right and you puked it, and you were right, there was something wrong with how much size you put on. Right. And you should be able to sit through that. So, I mean, I think like, and again, like to not like pick on Dominic too much, like that seems like at the core, like if you felt like the trade was right and you puked it, the puke was wrong, not the trade. And so then analyze the puke, right? So the puke either had to do with sizing or emotion. One or the other. And if it wasn't the sizing or the P&L or the, you know, negative draw at the time, then it's purely emotion. You didn't, mm-hmm, like that the trade was going against you and you didn't know where your exit was. And so if there was never any exit parameters, because he said he entered the trade back again, which is the next part, right? So if you entered the trade again, either the second entry was actually the real good entry,
right?
Or you just, whatever, you were early.
My assumption was he would put full size on it if he hadn't had just eaten the stop prior,
which is
that.
The second problem, yeah. Right? So in this example, he says, then I put the position back on once the trade was on the right side of the move, and he put it on only half size. And I think this kind of goes back to our first conversation of bet sizing. And, you know, if you thought it was an A setup on the back side of the move and a B setup on the front side of the move, that's, in my opinion, a little bit backwards. And you should be smaller sizing on the back side of the move or on the front side of the move. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's backwards. But if you're just saying the setup was neutral across the board, it was an A setup when I took it, and it was an A setup when I re-entered it, and you re-entered it on half the size that you put it on before, you're betting too big. If you had two A setups and you bet one A setup at 10 lot and one A setup at 5 lot, you're betting too big somewhere in there, because it should have just been put it back on.
Right.
And the stop that you ate gets paid for by the trade that you took when you put it back on. And that happens a lot. I mean, I don't think that's like some unfamiliar, uncharted territory. There's a lot of times where an A-plus setup just gets stopped out and then sets right back up and you just put it back on. And when you put it back on at half size, you naturally just run into the problem that he was saying, is that all you do is make your money back. And
right.
The other thing is, it's like, so now we're talking like, let's just break it down, a 10 lot to a 5 lot. So it's a 2R trade. If he's just making his money back on a 2R trade, and he put on a 10 lot, lost 1R, put on a 5 lot and made 2R, like, we've got a mathematical problem here.
Right.
That needs to be addressed. And, you know, was it a 4R trade and he just cut it at 2R because he was break even? You know, these are the type of things that you need to kind of analyze. But at the very beginning of it, I would just say that, like, if he felt like he was on the right side of the trade and puked it and it's still set up, there's an issue either with sizing or with like stop placement, exit placement. If he's entering the trade that was still rated the same value, A and A or whatever, and he entered it on half size versus the first trade on, you know, full size, you know, there's a problem there, again, likely with bet sizing or just emotions. But the big piece here is that he talked about the front side of the move and the back side of the move because he called it a V. And so my guess is he was fading the move. Let's just say it's a short. He's shorting a up rotation, mm-hmm. right? And he got puked out. And then he shorted the downside or the backside of the move, right? So he's shorting a front side move and he got puked out. Then he shorted a backside move, like it's shorting, and it worked. One of the things that I learned from like some old school guys on here is like, you never short a front side move, like, so you never fade a move on an up candle. And, you know, whether that helps in this situation or not, you know, I don't know, but like, if you're fading a move, never fade a move on an upwards candle. So like, basically don't try to pick the top, like let the top set and then take the first downward candle. So yeah, okay, you can take a front side short. Don't get me wrong, we all do it. But if you're taking a front side short, you need to manage the trade with front side risk. And whether that's cutting the trade quicker or sizing down, there should be some sort of like thing that clicks in your head that says, I'm taking a front side short and I need to manage this trade as such. If you're taking a backside short, the move is already rolled over and you're shorting downward candles or a reversal, then you can treat the trade like a backside short, which is either full size or you're adding quickly or whatever that you're doing differently. But think about it in that way too, Dominic. My suggestion is like, if the trade was right and it's right because it's the level and you're a level trader, then you just need to click the button, buy the ticket, take the ride. You don't puke it unless you hit your exit. And if you hit your exit before truly hitting your exit, then you've oversized and you just need to do that analysis. If you re-enter the trade on the backside of the move and you're fading an up rotation and now it's going down and you did it on half size on the downward, again, look introspectively and say, did I downsize this because I thought that the trade setup was downsized, or because I was emotionally scarred from losing one R, being early? And again, it just comes down to analytics of like emotions and like the actual trade analysis and really looking at it from that perspective. Because taking a 5-lot trade and then taking a 10-lot trade, a 10-lot loss right before that, it's just like math at the end of the day.
Hey, Dom, if you want to send us in there your trades, maybe DM them to Flaherty or Baba Yaga. I'm sure maybe we can give you a little bit more.
Oh, Dom's in here. Let's go, Dom.
Sounds like people want to see some of that nuance. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, dude, shorting the up move is the point of max prop. It's the point of max profit too, right? Like, but you know, when you're doing that, you have to have like a place where you're going to cut it. And if you're cutting it and it still works, either your spot was wrong, your sizing was wrong. So I would look at the trade from that perspective and less from the, how do I manage like this break even environment that I've created, the sizing, the emotions, the front side, backside nature of the move. But yeah, in my opinion, if you're shorting a front side move, you should either be smaller and looking to add when it's either going up against you. God forbid I said that, right? You add to loser. You're pyramiding in, or you're in a comfortable enough size where you're giving it this much room to your exit, and it goes here, it rolls over, and when it rolls over and starts to break, even if you were early, now you put on your full size on the break. And again, I think it really just comes down to trade management and position size management. But as a rule of thumb, short down candles and long up candles when you're fading the move, when you're on the upside, or front side move versus backside move, like short down candles, long up candles when you're fading. And that typically will have a much better result than just like picking a spot.
I think that's going to be the freaking title of this episode. Never fading up candles.
Short down candles, long right? up candles. Yeah.
All right. I think we got through everything here.
Those were good questions, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were. The other thing about the position sizing on when you're fading a move or whatever, there's times where, because of where we're trading, and Kyle mentioned this, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, I'm not interested in being a bidder anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested to get a feeler short going. So even though we're in a rally, quote unquote, like technically we're making higher highs and lower lows, I will get into a backside scalp anticipating that if this one is the one that goes, I'll have another chance to either add in. So I'll scale the bulk of my position quickly. So I'll put on a position, scale it quickly, have a piece left, and then look to add on the next, when it further confirms that, or I just take the stop. But you just mentally have to be prepared to know that you may only be scalping off maybe a third of what, you know, of the position, and then eating either a break even or you just, you know, take the stop in the same amount of profit that you just took off, and you're just giving yourself the room. If you're like strategic about that, you're not down like killing yourself or like being negative about yourself from the standpoint of like, oh, I'm on the wrong side of it again. You know what I'm saying? Like you're going into it with an idea of, I'm trying to express this idea in the market. This is how I'm going to do it. And then if it goes, that's awesome. If not, we have a plan for how we're going to navigate this. You know what I mean?
You got to get paid quicker on this.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's shifting from offense to defense, right? So we're fading an up move. We're on defense. So what do you do when you're on defense? You're being defensive. You're managing your size. You're maybe cutting in and out. Even if you're adding to the loser, right? You're in, and then you add, and then nope, this wasn't it. You're cutting it, and you're still in some version of like a drawdown on the trade. But when you go from defense to the V and you're now on offense, you also need to have the mindset that now you're on offense. And, you know, we've had this conversation a bunch. Like, I'm a very offensive trader. So when you're on the right side of that trade, then you should also push too, which again, going back to his comment of like, once he got on the right side of the trade, he was being defensive. So he was offensive on the fade, and he was defensive on the transition to the right direction of the trade. And, you know, again, I think look at it from that perspective of like, how do you switch that mentality of playing defense when you're fading and playing offense when it rolls over? And how do you manage that transition when you feel like you're early on a bottom or a top? And how do you manage those sort of rotations? And that gets into like what would be another great conversation of like recycling, like you mentioned it, Bob, but like recycling into these trades, because you can work a low in this mentality and build a buffer of some points where, yeah, okay, maybe you were in 10 and you recycled it and like you're only in like 3 by the time it breaks. But most of the time when it breaks, it comes back. And you've realized because you were in 10 and now you're in 5 and then you're in 10 and you're in 5 and you're in 10 and you're in 5. You've realized maybe 100 points of profit down in this little area that you're working and you're recycling. And now you've got 100 points buffer for that pullback that you can put that size back on. You're on the front side of the move and boom, now you can feel confident about potentially holding the trade and reaching for your targets and some of those things. So maybe a good conversation for another episode of, sort of like working a low, working a high, that whole recycling concept, which is very nuanced, relatively difficult to do, but it's a skill set, right? I mean, it's just something that you should be, ready to do, but.
Well, I think we answered everybody's questions. Hopefully we didn't put them too much on the spotlight.
I appreciate these guys putting the questions out there. I like that format. That's pretty cool. And thank you to Dom and Eraser for Paper, whatever it is, which is an awesome name. Way to put yourself out there and ask the hard questions.
Yeah, if anybody has questions for the next one, man, shoot them our way. You can either hit one of us up on Twitter or via the Discord. You can email us at bandittraderspodcast@gmail.com. But I think it's about time to wrap things up and get everyone off the bed. What do you guys say?
Yeah, wrap it up.
All right, well, I think that's going to do it. I'd like to say thank you, Flary. Thank you, Baba. Thank you, everybody in the live chat. Thank you, guys. In the Discord for submitting the questions for today. That makes the episodes a lot easier to plan when I don't have to think of things myself. make sure you visit Vonta Trading to catch those 30-point ES runners with Baba Yaga every morning. Trade with that packed house. Go to bandittraderspodcast.com where you can browse that catalog by guests. Don't forget our friends over at Rare Barrel on YouTube where they'll be knocking back Knob Creek number 9. Be back soon with another episode, hopefully more impressive than something that I didn't write yet. But until that day, like, share, subscribe, all that good stuff, and have a wonderful week.
Yeah.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.